Chloe Salto here, sports editor of The Age. We have the best footy writers in the country, and they're working hard to bring you the latest news and insights as clubs jostle for final spots and the coaching merry-go-round moves into overdrive. In England, it's Ashes time, and our team of cricket experts will bring you the sharpest and most comprehensive coverage of each test, both online and in the newspaper. We couldn't do any of this without the support of our subscribers, which allows us to invest in marquee events like this. Subscribe today at theage.com.au.
This is The Age Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, the Bulldogs have made eighth spot theirs to lose as the Adelaide teams both stumbled terribly in round 22. We'll take a close look at the run home, the battle for spots in the top four, and look back at what may have been the best game of the year. Right after this.
Here we go. Gadsden sets his sights on Roughhead. Yes!
Incredible handball by Bonampelli back to Lipinski. Lipinski around the corner, and that's how easy it is.
He doesn't to Nelson. It would have put him in front. They didn't concede the behind. And now they might concede a goal. Rewald!
Hello and welcome. My name is Michael Gleeson. And with us this week, Jake Nile and Caroline Wilson. Welcome to you both.
Well, it's a wonderful Monday, isn't it? When we realise yet again what this game can do and what it can create.
Well, 1v2 was a superb contest, but the two best teams, Jake, might well be those sitting in the bottom half of the four. The 3v4 game.
The 3v4 game is the game of the year on what I've seen in terms of the epic quality. It could also be the most important result of the home and away season. If you look at what was at stake for both clubs, but particularly and even other clubs. So you look at the shape of the top four. If Richmond don't make the top four, it's very difficult to win the premiership. Now that they're in the top four, they're flag favourites. It's actually it's on a knife edge. And the whole game, Caro, they got on top from that terrible start. They won their way back to a winning position, and then West Coast came back at them again like a champion side.
Yeah, they did. They were unbelievable. When Richmond got to more than two goals ahead, you thought, well, that's it. That's the game. For West Coast in the wet, with the pressure they were under, one man down, to come back again. I mean, there were a couple of dubious umpiring decisions, I thought, that went against Richmond. But
some went against the Eagles too.
They did. It wasn't great umpiring. But I think the unsung hero of all the heroes on Sunday was Damien Hardwick. I think Damien Hardwick has not had enough credit for what he's done this year. And it was the juxtaposition or the comparison of him storming out a quarter time and having a serious crack at Ivan Soldo compared with Ken Hinckley the day before storming out a quarter time and taking his two ruckmen to task. And you saw the response from the Richmond ruckman as compared with the Port Adelaide ruckman. And it was, he doesn't often really do that, Damien. And I think his game plan stood up in dry and wet, despite that, as you say, Jake, terrible first quarter. And yes, he had Dustin Martin, which West Coast didn't have. But I thought his coaching performance on Sunday was unbelievably good.
Yeah, I want to give also a bit of praise to Dion Prestia. Well, I think through the whole period where, if you'd said this season Trent Cotchin's going to have the problems with his hamstrings and he's not going to play that much, Dion Prestia has stepped up to a level that Trent Cotchin's been replaceable to a degree that I wouldn't have thought possible based on prior history.
Yeah, he's been great. And of course, Dusty, after quarter time, owned the MCG. He brought other teammates into the game. He addressed the team during the breaks. I think he embraced every single teammate at the end of when the final siren went. I mean, he knew. It was like Richmond knew if they lose on Sunday, Michael, they can't win the flag.
Well, I don't know about can't, but I think that Hutchings out going down, and he'd been good on Dusty. And
it was a big loss.
That's a really significant loss. Like, he's a really important player. He's got a good record against very good players. So you take that into consideration.
Well,
not only
that, it was an unsung factor. When Collingwood beat West Coast a few weeks ago over in Perth in a pretty big upset, Hutchings wasn't playing. He had a hamstring, I think, and he didn't play on steel side bottom. And he has owned steel side bottom in most of those games that they've played. It's sometimes, yeah, little factors. But they are great teams, and it was a fascinating game in terms of how those teams play because they have different styles.
Richmond plays well in the wet, which is sort of unusual for a team that does handball a lot, but they are a territory there, and they're a territory-based game. West Coast isn't. I thought they adjusted their game well, West Coast.
I think it took them a while.
After the second quarter, it was sort of third and fourth quarter, they started to adjust it and played better. I actually thought Tom Lynch is as good a big man in the wet as, and as is Jack Riewoldt for that matter.
Yeah.
I think that they are critically important. I know that's stating the obvious when you're talking about two big forwards, but when you look at the makeup of the teams in the top eight, they've got something that is a point of difference, and you look at them against West Coast. West Coast's big asset are their intercept marking key backs, and they can't be allowed to free range against Richmond because of the quality of those two.
Well, it was almost like, and I'm not a student of the game like you are, Jake, but I felt that both game plans, which are very different, stood up.
Yep.
And Richmond, although they couldn't get ahead of West Coast until the last quarter, persisted with that game
method. Well, they knock it forward. It's not chaos and control. I think our own Dan Cherney had written about that for game day. It's West Coast game, there's less margin for error with a wet ball because they kick and catch more. But the thing that strikes me about them that I think we underestimate is their small forwards. Willie Rioli, his talent, I don't know. I think he is going to be, I'm not going to say he's going to be as good as Cyril, but he is a hell of a talent.
Got power too, hasn't he?
Well, some of the crumbing he did in the first quarter, and when he found, I can't remember who he kicked to on the lead, might have been Jack Darling or Kennedy. He kicked to someone on the lead. Just very, very skillful player.
Yeah, you think if he kicks that last goal, the result could have been very different. The big worry for Richmond is injuries, though, yeah. Michael. Now, Trent Cotchin back against Brisbane. Not sure about Toby Nankervis. I know in the end the big blokes for Richmond stood up, but I'm not sure about Ivan Soldo in finals. And you have to worry about Dylan Grimes. I mean,
it's one thing to get through a game.
Must have been some mighty jab they gave him during the third quarter, I tell you.
You would think he wouldn't play against Brisbane. I don't know, but you'd think they wouldn't take a risk and that they'd get the bye and get him back for the finals.
And Sydney Stack was down on form, but they've now lost him for the season. So the injury worries do continue for the Tigers.
Yeah, but I think they can cover most of them. Probably Cochran's probably. My bigger concern wouldn't
can't
be...
Can't cover Grimes.
No, they can't cover Grimes. Grimes would be a disaster if he's out. But I think that Cochran is coverable. The issue would be I wouldn't want it to happen during a game. So I think that if you can deal with Cochran's either in or he's out, the bigger worry I would have is if it goes during a game. As per Hutchings, you don't want that to happen.
The recurrence is the problem for Cochin.
Well, it's happening a lot across the competition, though, isn't it?
I know, but it's happened already a couple of times with Cochin this year. So you are troubled. You are worried about how much time is the right amount of time for him right now. Is it to get him in and give him one game so that he gets a game under his belt before the finals? Or is it to say, gee, let him run, let him go. Give him another week, then he gets basically 2 weeks off and his hamstring should be right. Now, there were a couple of you mentioned freeze, but the studs up. We saw it on
particularly
Queen's
the
birthday.
First one.
Two were paid and they weren't paid for push out. They were paid for studs up. Now, after Queen's birthday, Jake, Jeremy Howe on Tom McDonald, there was an interesting one. I think you were away at the time, Carrie, but there was an interesting scenario where we had Steve Hocking saying it was the correct decision and how we should pay it for the rest of the year. And on the basis of that, that was rightly applied against Jack the other day, on the basis of the Jeremy Howe moment. But days after that, Steve Hocking saying that, Gil McLaughlin said, I didn't like it. That's not the reason we changed the rule and it shouldn't be applied. I don't think that was the right call. So we had this mixed message then. They've said that they will review it at the end of the year. I think that there will be a change.
They reviewed it because of Toby Green.
Yes.
And they reviewed it. Some of the incidents that Toby Green was involved in weren't even, the most egregious one wasn't a marking contest. It was against the Bulldogs and he put his leg out into, I can't remember it was a shocker actually. But he did it again in games against the Swans, I think, late in the season.
Yeah, was it Libba? Okay. Yeah, he's got a lot to answer for, Toby Green. But it was nothing like what happened yesterday Sunday.
When I saw the free, my first instinct was he's pinged him for interfering in the marking contest.
Or for pushing the back.
For pushing the back, that he's taken him out of the contest. I didn't realise. I'm like, oh, goodness me, he's paid it for studs up.
However.
Which really surprised.
But on Michael's reasoning, it was consistent. It's just unfortunate. And you invoked, I think, in your column on Monday, the grand final scenario and what would happen Well, it has been invoked anyway.
Yeah, I don't think it was me, but yeah. Oh, well,
I did read your column. Was very good, by the way.
It was excellent, by the way.
No, but I just think that I don't see how they're not going to make a change now. It's not going to change now. And it is completely – I mean, Damien Hardwick was right. I'm not being biased here. It was against the spirit of why the different rule interpretation was introduced.
But also, I find it impossible to think that there's been no other instance – since Queen's birthday, where those marking contests have occurred. So we can say it's consistent. It's actually not consistent.
Yeah, don't worry. Because I went back and had a look at Lincoln McCarthy. I actually did to make sure, and his foot just misses the back of his opponent. Because imagine if that wasn't paid.
Well, he also used his hands, didn't he, Lincoln McCarthy?
Yeah,
well.
He did.
So if you want to be
his hands were there, but yeah.
His feet were up there too, but they didn't hit the opponent.
If you took the old rule, which they've stopped the hands in the back, if you looked at that, you'd say, you know, it was a hands in the back under the old rule.
But if you go through, and the rules do talk about incidental contact, and then it is not necessarily with the hands, but if you go back, every Jeremy Howe mark, every Gary Ablett senior mark is around the neck to someone. When you're standing on someone's head, you're interfering with them. But yeah. The greater good is one of the features of the game is the high marking.
The old Greg Hobbs book, you know, the 50 greatest mark. That,
that's
a
great
lot
book.
Of the, a lot of those.
A few of those would be.
Have you got that? I've got that book.
I had that. I don't have any more, Carol. I don't know what happened to it. But
I think my brother's got it. But a lot of those wouldn't be there.
Okay.
Under the current rules.
There were other games played on the weekend. We'll come back and have a closer look at some of them.
Do you have a question or comment for the team? Send us an email, realfootypod@theage.com.au.
McKernan with strength, releasing Tip and Woody into space with a snap and the goal. A great finish.
Welcome back, Jake. A week ago we were talking about the misery of Essendon and it couldn't get any worse. But you throw Hurley back in, you throw Saad back in. They're a different looking team.
They got beaten really badly. Just looking at some of the numbers, the contested ball by over 50. Now, typically, you can't win a game with that sort of number, and they won it quite convincingly. It was remarkable.
That was the upset of the round for me.
After,
well, I just felt that all the momentum was falling against Essendon, and Fremantle had, you know, the big retirements, and it was at home, and I know Fremantle are unreliable, but that was a fillip for John Worsfold. I was certain he would not be coaching that football club next year. I'm still not convinced he's going to be coaching them.
If he wins a final, they have to keep him, don't they? Based on their own criteria, they
unless he leaves by mutual consent. But no, that was an unbelievable win for them, and it was a reminder that they had a terrible team in the week before. Doesn't excuse 21 goals in a row, but you saw what the Bulldogs did up in the west of Sydney, and you sort of went, well, maybe the Bulldogs too was a massive part of that and didn't get the credit they deserved.
How much of it also, Jake, you look
Saad
at
Saad as well, just the other thing, when Saad coming into the side. So when Saad and Hurley are playing, they are a dramatically better side because their game style, a lot of it comes from winning the ball back behind the ball and then launching.
Yep, I noticed he was in the best players as well. So he's obviously come back with the big bang. Hurley had a lot of touches. I still don't see them doing much damage, particularly if they're going to lose David Zaharakis, which it looks like they might.
Yeah, though you'd look at it right now and say that the way the eight is now, and we know that things can change, but GWS... they would play in the first week of the finals based on the current eight. They'd be a reasonable chance of that. It's up there, but GWS is really struggling. Well, 2 weeks in a row, bad losses.
Well, yeah, and you know, mind you, there's a common denominator to some of these results where people get embarrassed, top eight teams get embarrassed. The Bulldogs, playing the Bulldogs. And the Bulldogs, right at the moment, that midfield of theirs must be the best in the competition. Right now, with Bontempelli, who's... Well, if he's not the best player, he's in the top few.
Yeah.
And McRae and, of course, Dunkley, who's just an incredible ball magnet.
Tim English was out at the weekend, but I've liked his season. I think he's a good talent.
Yeah. And even young Bailey Smith, for a first-year player, has got real zip. So
Liberatore is still to come back into that team.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they do that.
And as a segue from that, Adelaide, let's face it, had a miserable season. They've been attacked by everyone, including me, and deservedly so. And just as a final clagger, they get sent to Ballarat in round 23.
That we love Ballarat, of course.
Well, it's not much fun to go and play footy there. No. Seriously. It's not.
I'm going to have the Ballarat tourism's going to be on the phone. alone, Kara. We're going
to
be.
I've been to Mars. I drove past it just the other day. I'm sorry, but if you're Adelaide and you want to, you're playing to get a spot in the eight, that would be the last place you would want to go.
And the Bulldogs would be about the last team that you'd want to play, I think.
That's it. For that reason.
Some teams higher up, Caro, don't want to play the Bulldogs. I know Richmond supporters, Collingwood supporters, they're like, I don't want to play them. It's the way they're playing.
Well, that's why fifth spot is such a poison chalice. And, you know, it's really Richmond's or Collingwood's. Collingwood, you think, would win on Friday night against Essendon. They'll certainly go in favourites. And I know you think Richmond should beat Brisbane at the MCG, but that's a 50-50 game for mine.
No, I just think that Richmond's incentive is so great compared to Brisbane. Brisbane, if you look at Brisbane's position, their percentage is over 120. It's going to be very difficult for them to drop to third.
That's true, but you see Chris Fagan running onto the field, embracing players, yep. The way they celebrated that, the idea.
Is that Harris Andrews? That was a pretty big hug, wasn't it?
It was a big hug, but a lot of man love there.
Did you get to Lincoln McCarthy, who just, you know, taken a horizontal mark and threaded it?
I think it was just whoever was in front of him. He was going
to. Not a great game, but a great moment, I think, is the way the coach summed it up. I think he also said that he was a bit embarrassed about that he might have. But his behaviour wasn't as churlish as Chris Scott. I mean, I don't want to turn on Chris. No, we're going to talk about that.
The point I was going to make is that the euphoria from them in beating the top team, in taking top spot, in being able to knock over, that I think that they would be keener on the momentum of knocking over Richmond, knocking over these two contenders in consecutive weeks going into the finals, Jake, than thinking we're okay. I know it can be just a mental sort of 1% sort of shift in mentality for the players, but I think that they are going to be absolutely desperate to do it on the MCG. They only played once this year and got belted
by Essendon.
Well, yeah, but look, it comes down to it. I think Richmond are a better team than Brisbane, and that's what I'm founding it upon.
You don't quite believe in Brisbane, do you?
No, I have to admit it. I don't fully believe in them. I don't believe that they're top of the ladder. Do I think they're the best team? No, I don't. I think they're deservedly in the top, you know, four or five. But do I think I don't think that they're as good as Richmond. That's what I base it on.
Another soul-searching week for the two Adelaide clubs. We mentioned the Adelaide Crows, who had a shocker, it must be said.
Well, who was worse?
Oh, Adelaide. Adelaide was worse because they were playing at home, and they, at the start of the year, were considered by everyone a top four side and definitely back in the eight side. And it looks like now they're going to miss. So Adelaide was worse.
Well, worse than Port. Port's game, Port lost at...
Port were dreadful, but...
They lost by, 90 points?
Port were dreadful, and they were against a North Melbourne team playing at home who had been embarrassed the previous week.
Port are playing for a spot in the eight, and North...
So are Adelaide.
So are Adelaide, and they
were
at
home. Yeah, I know, but they're...
But I didn't have Port in my eight, and I did have Adelaide. So on that basis alone, and Port have thrown in so many new players into that team, including three really exciting players, all of whom have recommitted to the club. So I'm not so sure about Ken Hinckley's future, but I feel a lot more positive about Port Adelaide's future. And yes, it was a dreadful loss. And yes, they have been woefully inconsistent. I mean, their fluctuating form has been a debacle. And that was a final spot that they were playing for, and they lost. But I still think Adelaide, we will see wholesale changes at that footy club.
More unsettled feeling about Adelaide as a footy club. I think the difference is that Adelaide, there's more player stirrings and stirrings around the coach than there is. I'm not saying everything's completely kosher at Port, but I think Port's issues are not as club-wide.
I wonder if the missing the eight creates the greater environment or greater ability to sell the idea of a rebuild of the list that will actually enable players to leave that really want to get out.
Is it the Crows?
Yeah. They would have otherwise not countenanced, but now that they can say, oh, well, we're rebuilding. One of them being Eddie Betts.
Yep.
I could imagine Eddie back at Carlton.
No, I think they're looking at senior players to be traded out for draft picks. I think that's exactly what they're looking at. And they had a go at it from about 2015. If you go back to when Dangerfield was there in 2015, they felt they had a team that could win the premiership potentially. They had 15, 16.
Hang on. They went and got Bryce
17.
Gibbs. How do you say that?
This is now. They got Bryce Gibbs at the end of when they'd been in the grand final. Now they realise they're not good enough. I think they've come to a different position as a club now.
They've also got a football director who I know I come back to a lot in Mark Ricciuto, who's commenting in the media and who at half time says they're going to have to change the game plan. Now, that is not helpful for your club psyche. It's not helpful for your club brand, for your PR. And there must be some strained relations going on.
Something's wrong in Renmark.
I find it absolutely staggering.
somewhere in South Australia.
Every time it happens, I find it extraordinary that the football director is commentating on games for his club.
Hysterical.
On the TV.
Just ridiculous.
It's so you've farcical.
You've got Alex Keith strongly linked to the Bulldogs. Well, there's no way Josh Jenkins will be at that club next year. I mean, that would
be... Well, there is a way. What if no one wants him?
Yeah, I reckon there'll be someone who'll want to.
They'd have to be carrying some of his money.
They'd have to carry some of the money.
He's better than he's been playing this year.
Yep.
I think that also bets to Carlton. Teague being appointed, he was Eddie's coach back over there. The families are close.
He could end up at Gold Coast too.
Could. But
I think Gold Coast can offer...
Speaking of woeful performances... I mean, they may have well have said, Sorrento Sharks or the Glen Iris Gladiators to turn up and just, you know...
Just to name two teams you're familiar with.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, just to have a team to play against Jared Ruffett. Because seriously, that was... I don't want to rain on Ruffy's parade, and it was wonderful, but that was pathetic.
Well,
it creates the conundrum for him. They give him the farewell game, and now he goes and kicks six, and they go, gee, what do we do now?
Well, that was Clarko's fault, because he said in the press conference last week it mightn't be his last game. Only yourself to blame, Alistair. Or what did he call him? The cockroach.
Well, they're all the cockroach. Well, they got the bye, and Ruffy kicks his six, but I still don't think that they're going to... I don't think that they now make the eight from there.
They've got no chance at all, because I think I'm certain the Bulldogs will beat Adelaide and then it becomes irrelevant.
Yeah, and they've got to beat West Coast in Perth, which is...
More likely than the Bulldogs losing.
Well,
because
at least there's a Clarkson. At least there's a Clarkson Mitchell potential sort of.
Would you play Ruffy again, maybe as a defensive forward on McGovern?
No. No.
The only reason you would play Roughhead would be if you thought it would give the playing group some sort of lift,
a rough chance,
whatever.
He wasn't good enough to play for however 18 rounds or whatever. That was
just kick six.
He had a lovely farewell, and that was wonderful, and that's it.
Sorry, Ruffy Carras, drawn a line through. Well, that's
I think
it.
The coach did it when he described him being chased down after the game, when he did the press conference after the game. I think that was the biggest hint we were going to get.
Time for Just Between Us.
Just Between Us.
Welcome to another edition of Just Between Us. Sam McClure joined by a late in, Anthony Colangelo. Dan Cherney, a late out, in brackets, not sure what happened. And Colange has come in a little nervous looking, I must say.
Well, just nervous because of the mysterious disappearance of Dan Cherney.
Yes, well, in fairness, we could have lost better people.
Wow. I'm not going to get involved in that one.
That's just Between Us banter.
Go for it, Sam.
Well, we start Just Between Us today with the whispers surrounding Stephen Kinnealeo and his potential departure from Greater Western Sydney. Now, it was all the buzz at the Carlton President's Function pregame on Saturday, largely, Anthony, because of what was said the previous night by Hamish McLachlan that Carlton were out.
Right.
Now, Hamish, not only a brilliant broadcaster, and MC, very knowledgeable in these areas, but also a business partner of Stephen Kinnealeo's. I believe they own a steak restaurant together.
Really?
In Swan Street, Richmond. But nevertheless, Carlton aficionados in the presence of greatness on Saturday. Was it Ken Hunter? Was a guest speaker at the President's Function, adamant that they had not been told anything. So... The mystique continues. Even this is almost getting to Chris Judd proportions. This will he go? Where will he go?
A lot to be excited at Carlton at the moment. Six wins, David Teague, Stephen Kinnealeo, business partners with Hamish McLachlan, who's making his comments. Lid's coming off.
Is it?
Is there any rabbit served at that steak restaurant? Of course, Kinnealeo means rabbit in Italian, just between us.
No, there wasn't. There were a couple of goals kicked from the Dom Sheed pocket, though, on the weekend. I'm not sure if that's of any relevance to you.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Oh, okay.
Sam, just between us, a long line of AFL players have gone over to the NFL to be punters with varying degrees of success. Ben Graham, Sav Rocker, quite good at it. Chris Bryan went over.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure how he went.
Not as well.
But the next one... to do so, apparently, or is considering doing so, just between us, is kind of makes a lot of sense. The cannon, Trent McKenzie, at Port Adelaide.
Yeah, well, if there was someone that fitted the mould better, I'd like to meet them, because he's got one of the most raking left foots you will ever see, and can't break into the team.
No, he's emergency again this week, and yeah, I think
he's
was
been
as well
emergency like almost the last month.
Yeah, so he's played 14 or 15 games in the Sandford, doing okay, but can't break into the team.
So he's going to go over, and
he's considering it. So he's out of contract at the end of this year, and considering whether. Well, he doesn't know whether it'll be a delisting or a retirement, but strongly considering going over and trying his hand at punting in the NFL. And a man that consistently kicks 70 to 80 metres, you'd think he'd be quite good at it.
It's a good yarn from you. Good find. Your next task, find Daniel Journey.
That could be very hard.
That's between us.
Just between us.
We're online all the time. Just search Age Real Footy on Facebook or Twitter.
They're going to the top of the square again, and the heat is on. Elliott off the left this time and makes it a triple at the start of the quarter.
The last 2 weeks prior to this, they'd beaten the bottom and second bottom teams. But, Jake, on the weekend, Collingwood defeating Adelaide.
Who are
playing like the third bottom team. Did they show something to you in the way they played?
Yes. Yeah, no, I thought they played. Their defensive method, it was like early in the game, you could tell in 10, 15 minutes in, they're going to win this quite comfortably, that Adelaide just couldn't move the ball and initially couldn't score and then couldn't move the ball as the game went on. It was piloted by their defensive actions as good as they were at any point last year. Then gradually Collingwood got more and more on top around the ball, and then finally their forwards feasted on the carcass of the Crows.
And it raises that idea, Cox has been out. Do they look better without him in the team?
Definitely. I mean, he was horribly out of form by the time they lost him. Taylor Adams is been, I mean, he's the one who's, and he's brought other midfielders back into the game, playing the roles they were playing before they lost him. And it's just ominous, I reckon, when you think Jordan Dugowie, who I still think is born to play finals, and Jaden Stevenson, who some would say shouldn't be playing finals, but he will be, are coming back into the team for September.
Yeah, I'll put it this way. I don't know if they can win it, but if you're Geelong or Richmond or West Coast, you don't want to play Collingwood with those players
at
playing
the MCG.
At the MCG. You don't want to play them because they're just dangerous.
Recent results notwithstanding against Richmond.
Well, recent results, you know, Richmond's last game against them, they touched them up. But the game earlier in the season where the personnel was more even.
It was like Collingwood played against Richmond in that first set, round two, I think it was, of the season, the way West Coast played in the first quarter on Sunday.
Yeah.
They just completely decimated them, except Collingwood went on with the job and Richmond had absolutely no answers.
Well, there's an interesting thing with this game now, Jake. If Darcy Moore comes back into the team.
Maybe.
If, I said. Yep. So if and when,
yep.
Presuming he comes back in either this week or in the first week of the finals, possibly two games in a row against
this team. Well, I don't think Dugowie does.
Then where do you play him? Do you play him behind the ball?
Yep.
Or do you play him forward? Roughhead's been playing forward. He's probably the better defender, not better defender, but you could see him fitting in there.
I think what you do is you go with Roughhead forward first because he's the second ruck, and if it's not working, you swap them. So I think that's pretty clear what they'll do. I would be surprised if they didn't go the other way.
I tell you what, it's gone from being a dud fixture, hasn't it, this Friday night to an intriguing one, Collingwood v Essendon.
Well, it's an odd game too because it could have a lot at stake, but only if results go a certain way, or it could be something that they end up playing the next week against each other.
Well, I mean,
so it's an
they're
odd
two
game.
Certain finalists, which you, even a week ago you didn't think Essendon was probably even going to make finals.
No, and you now think, you know, you look at that and think, okay, Essendon now looks like they're going to be a competitive team, whereas last week you're thinking, oh, God.
It's a lot better Friday night fixture than last week's, which you couldn't really blame the AFL for. Can I just throw in a question without notice? Because you're talking about ruckman. We spent a lot of time last week talking about Blixarves and Geelong's ruck situation. What have you changed your mind since what you saw against Brisbane?
On
who should play in the ruck for
Geelong? Oh, no, I think Reece Stanley, yeah. I'd be going with Reece Stanley. I think that got them reasonable results. I'm staggered that Blitzarves is a very good fullback, and I would just stick to that and put Stanley in the ruck.
Yeah, no, I actually agree with that.
And I think most of the Geelong players agree too. I think one of them even said so on the telly yesterday.
And I think they'll go back to it.
Yeah, well, which way do you see it falling then from here? You reckon Brisbane?
I think Richmond will beat Brisbane.
Brisbane will beat Brisbane.
West Coast will beat Hawthorn. But Brisbane probably will still end up second. One percentage from West Coast, unless Richmond thump them.
Would Geelong beat Carlton at home?
Yes.
So that means that Geelong finish top of the ladder.
Geelong
given their
will
percentage.
Finish first. Play Richmond
at the MCG as they did 2 years ago.
It would be interesting
ago.
If that happens. Richmond will be overwhelming favourites for a first v fourth game, which is reflective of where people really see these clubs as distinct from their ladder position.
Yeah, but in my opinion, the market.
Do you agree with that, Cara?
I do. I'm just not so certain. I feel that Richmond-Brisbane is not nearly the... I think that's a really 50-50 game. But if it is Richmond v Geelong, you would think Richmond would definitely go into that game favourite. And thank heaven some sanity prevailed and the AFL finally took them about 2 months later than when they'd already made the decision. But they finally said that that game would be at the MCG.
Interesting you mentioned the Bulldogs midfield earlier. Just one stat that isn't necessarily reflective of the whole... effectiveness of a midfield. But as far as scoreboard impact, goals per game by midfielders, 3 of the top 5 Brisbane players.
Really?
Yeah. Hugh McGluggage.
Neil.
Dane Zorko. Mitch Robinson.
Neil's not one of them.
No.
Goodness me.
That's an interesting stat.
So you've got, well, I'll give you the 5. It's McGluggage, then Zorko, Canelio, Mitch Duncan from Geelong, and then Robinson. That's, so you... Yes, maybe that reflects the fact we were talking about an unheralded midfield in Brisbane, that they're actually more potent than we've given them credit for.
Have you ever seen an umpire help a player with cramp, which happened with Mitch Robinson?
Have you ever seen an umpire?
He sort of realised, but he did it. It was like it was instinctive, and then he realised what he was doing and he backed away and one of the teammates took over.
Have you seen an umpire get virtually knocked out but still blow his whistle as he's falling to ground?
They had some interesting moments on the weekend.
Coming up, quick questions.
Like what you're hearing? Tell your mates. The Age Real Footy Podcast.
Back in the Cripps direction. Couldn't collect it. Mackay does. That's better. Oh. How's the physics of that?
Well, welcome back straight into quick questions. And we've got to lead off with the Blues, big Harry Mackay's goal. Caro, did the Blues make the right call signing Toot Toot David Teague all aboard the Teague train, and was 3 years the right contract?
Well, according to more than 50,000 people who rocked up to the MCG on Saturday, yes. Personally, I don't believe the process was anywhere near as rigorous as they said off the back of North Melbourne, which wasn't either. I think that, look, you talk to people internally, and my only reservation is that it was so bad under Bolton that there was always going to be a massive shift when a better person for that job took over. Having said all, and you really can't be listening to players, even though they might have been right about Paul Roos all those years ago, they weren't about Jeff Geeshan. Remember, Richmond won 7 in a row?
I remember.
Yep, unleash the Geesh. Look, it seems to me to have been the right decision. They obviously weren't that impressed with Michael Voss's presentation. I don't think they probably even spoke to anyone else. They certainly didn't go near.
They say they spoke to other people, but how in depth they spoke to other people, we don't know.
I gather Brad Scott wasn't prepared to go through the process. I think he sort of wanted the job, or not wanted. He wasn't prepared to be up against others. So yeah, I guess why not announce it now? It's going to help you in the trade period and start all that a bit earlier.
I think that's really.
What's the difference between this and North? I think that I'm just jumping on exactly what you said, Glees. The trade period, not just the trade period, the pursuit of Stephen Canelio. Let's not mince words.
Yep.
Stephen Canelio will want to know who's coaching Carlton if he's going to go there, and there are other players. Papley is a chance to go there, as is even at the outside possibly Brandon Ellis.
Brandon Ellis
is a chance to go
definitely
there.
Definitely a chance to go there.
Jack Martin, they seem to be cooling on a little bit, but there's all these players looking at going to Carlton, and they have to have a coach. You cannot be presenting. These things are done before the trade period, Caro, as we know. So there'll be meetings going on. Canelio will be in front of Carlton. Canelio, I think.
No, I reckon Hawthorn. I reckon Hawthorn think they've got Canelio now. Anyway,
also in another way,
question.
Just saying, oh, no, it is a quick question. I'll follow up with my own comment, which is that not only do they want to know who's coach, but when you see the 50,000 turn out there, Carlton looks a pretty attractive place to go. like a young player thinking, where do I want to go? Look at this. There's this momentum behind them. So we'll move straight on, segueing to the next question perfectly from you, Jake. Was Gil McLachlan wrong for offering his comment in the debate about where Cornelio should play next season?
He chose his words poorly is what I would exactly say. I have no problem. Had Gillen said the following, something like, I like all star players to stay at their club.
He would have been lying through his teeth. No way do they think that.
He wants to introduce a mid-season trade
and
period.
And a pre-season trade period. Yeah, no. They love player movement.
No, I think if he'd said something along the lines of great players staying at their club, a foundation players staying at a club, but he made it sound more like he was barracking for the Giants to just not fall in a heap when players leave.
You don't think it was just the expert line of questioning that he was...
Oh, it might have been. Well, you were there. You were there. I wasn't. So would you agree that he could have chosen his words better but still expressed something about players staying at clubs?
After he made the initial comment, I said, are you going to tell him that? And he said, I just have. So, I mean, he clearly thinks it. And look, I know I was there and it was a good interview for 3AW. However, I damn Gillen McLachlan again and again for being wishy-washy and over-consultative and not having opinions. So it's just, it's great for the game to see the boss have an opinion. And of course he wants Stephen Cornelio to stay at GWS. He does believe in equalisation. And of course he wants GWS to have success. I mean, I actually didn't mind. It wasn't like he's saying, I want Buddy Franklin to leave Hawthorn and go to GWS. Now that's a different kettle of fish altogether. So no, I thought he was overly criticised.
Okay. Which was the best farewell performance of the weekend?
Oh, without a doubt, Aaron Sandilands piggybacking Hayden Ballantyne off the ground. That was so cute. I mean, I know that it was
the first time Ballantyne's been cute in football, I think.
But it was lovely. I thought it was lovely. And it was a disappointing result for them. And I think you said before off air that the statistics, you know, really typified his career, poor old Sandilands. But no, I thought that was fabulous.
I want to throw in one could be a farewell performance. Dale Thomas.
I was going to say it was mine.
Dale Thomas gave people a bit to think about. He played very well in the week when he'd been, and you wrote about it, Gleese, that he was put in this position where he's being, you know, not offered a contract, but he wants to play on.
So who would take him? Because Carlton won't. And nor should they, by the way.
And Gold Coast won't.
No, I don't know.
I don't think he... I'd be surprised if he did find somewhere. But, gee, it's cruel for him because he's had his best, I think his best year
at Carlton
has been this
but
year.
But if it comes down to him and Simpson, who are you going to pick? And you're not going to keep both.
No, they're going to keep Simpson.
Okay, now bearing in mind this is quick questions, we're venturing into territory involving Melbourne. Which team was the real Melbourne? The 2019 version or the 2018 version?
It's a weird question because they both were the real Melbourne, and unfortunately what we saw this year was the real Melbourne for this year.
Well, unfortunately, if you look at the 10 years of Melbourne, the 2019 is, it might have, as someone said, there was a Melbourne dynasty that started, a Melbourne run that started in 2018 and lasted till 2018.
And they got belted in a prelim. They're eye for inconsistent. So I guess 18-19 just typifies what we've seen for the last 30 years, one of the most inconsistent teams in the comp.
Well, hopefully this week they don't play as last week, which is just desperate for the siren to go to end the season. That's all we have time for this week. Thanks to you both, Jake and Carrot, for joining us. Please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget you can get in touch with us via email, realfootypod@theage.com.au. Thank you to Fox Footy and Channel 7 for the audio we've used this week. We'll catch you next week.